as long as I can remember, I wanted to be a doctor. And now, of course, you have to ask yourself, how much are you reconstructing reality, or how much are you actually representing and telling reality? But I think the reason was because my parents had a very great veneration for the family pediatrician. This was still a day in which quite well-known pediatricians would actually come to your home. And I was quite a sickly little boy. I had 2 doses of diphtheria, which is quite unusual, and I had a lot of tonsillitis. So I saw a fair bit of this guy, and I saw the veneration that my parents had for him. He was not only a practicing pediatrician, he was also the head professor of pediatrics at the University of Vienna. And I suppose that got under my skin a little bit.
So you went on to do medicine in a very different time to now, where there were 600 students at Sydney University. Sounds like a real bun fight, was it?
We had a funny little song that we used to sing in first year that went 50% must fail. Yes, 600 going into first year. That was because of 2 reasons. First of all, there was no quota. If you matriculated, you could get in. Now, your parents had to pay the fees. You know, there were fees, not very high ones. I was lucky enough to get a Commonwealth scholarship. But if you could matriculate and get the fees, you could do med. And the second thing is our numbers were swollen by the ex-servicemen and quite a small number of ex-service women who were a very good influence on the class, I might say, because they were serious students while we were silly kids, really. The 50% must fail was not a joke, because the anatomy dissecting theatre, and anatomy was the big subject in second year, only had room for 10 bodies. And 32 to a body was the absolute, absolute, absolute maximum. You can imagine dissecting a quarter of a body with 8 of you trying to handle the scalpels and so forth. So it wasn't a joke, and indeed 50% did fail. And we ended up the end of the 6 years as about 220 or so.
It was so bad that you, in fact, had to give your own lectures.
Well, we did a very interesting thing in third year. I actually think I wasted my first 2 years at uni because I was so damn young. I was only 16 and three quarters when I started, and that is pretty young to be embarking on a lifetime career. But I kind of woke up in third year, and a group of us got together and started delving into the depths of a subject a little bit more than the lecturers could do, and started giving each other seminars. Let's say, for example, I might study up the white cells of the blood. And we'd study this up in the library, accessing the medical literature, usually not primary papers, but review articles and more specialised textbooks. And then we'd give these seminars. So you learnt a lot, and we kind of taught each other. That was a very good year from that point of view.
During your medical degree, you decided to take a year off medicine and do science. So you went to study with Professor Patrick de Burgh. What was that like?
He wasn't professor then. He was just plain Dr. de Burgh. Look, it was extraordinarily interesting because there were two of us, Frank Johnson and myself, were put onto a pathway of research that he outlined. There's no question. I mean, we were kids, you know. So he outlined a pathway of research. But then, to a significant degree, he left us alone, left us to make our own mistakes, came in and corrected the mistakes when he saw them. But to a large extent, we ploughed our own furrow. And that was really the first time in a learning experience that I had the chance of doing that. Secondly, he was a man of excellent scientific taste, very astute, a very profound reader of the literature, knew what was going on. He was not himself a great researcher. Their lives were just too compressed. I found that completely fascinating, and in a sense, I got hooked on research through de Burgh. Academic life is not just research. It's also university politics. It's also teaching. It's also got a lot to do with the atmosphere around the university. And the boss of the department, who was a chap called Hugh Ward, was one of the most respected professors in the university. And he almost always had someone interesting into our little modest sandwich lunches. So I got to know what was going on at the professorial board. I got to know what was happening in the Department of Education. I got to know what the Vice Chancellor was thinking. And, you know, you imagine for a 21-year-old boy, this is very heady stuff.
And you even got to hear McFarlane Burnett come and give a talk.
Actually, that story begins even the previous year in 1951, when Burnett came back from the United States from his, at that time, one of his very rare trips overseas. Tripping overseas wasn't like it is now. And he told us about the impending discovery of the polio vaccine. And he'd visited John Enders, who went on to win the Nobel Prize. And even, whether he visited or not, I don't know, even told us this young man, Jonas Salk, was going to make Enders' dream into an actual reality by the applied research and development work, which you always have to have after the basic research. And golly Moses, you know, to think that here was I sitting in this class of by now 250, hearing this great man, but talk about a discovery that in a way hadn't yet happened. Now, that was an amazing thing to my young brain, that inchoate sense of a discovery about to be made, which in this particular case changed human lives forever. I mean, polio was a terrible disease, the infantile paralysis, with the vicious epidemics coming up every 2 or 3 years. It never went completely away, but every 2 or 3 years there was a really brisk epidemic, so much so that our mothers wouldn't allow us to go to the pictures on a Saturday afternoon and wouldn't allow us to visit the local swimming pool in the summer because they were so frightened that we'd catch polio.
So two really incredible experiences, working in science and also seeing McFarlane Burnett and hearing
him. And I should go on to say that in that Bachelor of Medical Science year, the year 1952, Frank Johnson and I actually went down to Melbourne for a week and spent the bulk of that week more or less sitting at Burnett's feet, meeting all of the staff of the Walter and Eliza Hall Institute. And once again, for an impressionable youngster, that was pretty special.
That really set the path for you then, did it?
Well, it was interesting. I kept saying to myself, I must complete this medical degree and I must get a reasonable amount of hospital residency work under my belt. So I, in fact, did 2 years at Prince Alfred. In my deepest heart of hearts, I knew that I was hooked on the research.